It's the unmistakable sound of Ray Barreto on congas and percussion generally, one of my favorites, with this tune titled Power. This came from his 1970 album of the same name. It was a title track of that album. Ray Barreto died at the age of 76 in 2006. And interestingly, his body was flown to Puerto Rico for final honors, although he was born in Brooklyn and died in Hackensack, New Jersey. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. Yes, indeedy. A lot is happening, but we will not change our formula today unless you do so yourselves. This is your time, and I try to not allow things to just get into the way of your time. But the major development we have today, I must mention before we proceed, is that it is being reported that a person of interest has been taken into custody with respect to those suspicious packages mailed to 10 people yesterday, up to yesterday, and two more were added, so it is a full dozen people. The two additional people who received packages with alleged pipe bombs in them were Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper. So they have taken into custody a man with both New York and South Florida roots and connections. In fact, the packages were said to have been mailed out of South Florida, and we'll see how this develops. We don't know very much more than that. A van driven by him has been confiscated, taken in as well for a further investigation. It is festooned with all kinds of political imagery, pictures of people who are the enemies of the people, according to this gentleman. But we'll see. I don't like to rush into these things as if, we know this or that for certain. We don't know anything for certain, except a person has been taken into custody, a 56-year-old man from Florida, and a vehicle tied to him also has been taken into custody by federal authorities. Two more public figures were added to the list. That was 10 yesterday. So today it now stands at 12. The last two are James Booker, the senator from New Jersey, and the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. And the investigations begin in earnest as of today. When I say in earnest, I mean now with a vehicle. Now, with someone with a confirmed identity, we would imagine that a lot more will develop out of this. But it is Free Your Mind Friday at 888-874-4888. I'd like you to be as concise as you possibly can be in getting your points across. Oh, well, look who is here. Jay from New York. We haven't heard from you in a while, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing How are you doing? I hope all is well with you.
Same here for you.
Yeah, I've been listening. I just haven't had the opportunity to call in. In regards to the person that was just picked up in this whole bombing thing, it just goes to show the sickness of certain individuals, because there's no way in hell that you're going to send out 12 or more bombs to key figures in the United States and they're not going to get you. There is nobody in the United States that could do it and get away with it, because they're going to get you. Because the reason to start with is Big Brother is watching everywhere. There are cameras everywhere. So with the way technology is, they go spot you. And when they spot you, they got all sort of mechanisms in place to identify you. And once they identify you, then they go get you. And now it's just a matter of how the media is gonna spin who is he affiliated with. Now, just imagine if it turns out that he's with the Democratic Party. Or just imagine if he turns out to be a supporter of the Wingnut 45. Then what happens? Then where does the direction of the country go?
The
Then
best
who's
thing to
going to be
do
the next nut job?
the best thing to do is to simply stay put, pay attention to the developments, but
That's
draw
it.
absolutely no
No
conclusions.
conclusions. No
No.
conclusions over the years, like you have taught us to let the game and the theater of the absurd play out. Because the reality is this, Sister Utrecht. This sick individual that in office at this time, 45, is just exposing America around the world for who and what it is. And as Malcolm said to us over 50 some years ago, the chickens are going to come home to roost. And this is what's going to happen. The thing is, how are we going to prepare ourselves and how are we going to place ourselves in a position to survive whatever happens? Because it's not
Well,
like it's
that's the
going to
whole
get any
point I
better.
always drive home. The major job that we have is to see to our survival. All kinds of
That's
crazy
it.
things are going to happen, left, right, and center. But we must stay focused on what is the primary of primary importance, and that is we have to survive and we have to keep our heads clear.
Above water.
In a situation like this, there are all kinds of things that are happening and will continue to happen to put your mind over here, to put your mind over there, and have you come to conclusions that you shouldn't come to. Just wait.
Well,
Just wait.
let me leave you with this, Utrecht. Like you
Okay.
said, keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and keep your mouth shut, and just watch what's going on and see how it plays out. Because the sad thing is that we have a media that's not about the concerns of the people, but about the bottom line, which is the dollar. And when it's all said and done, tragically, a lot of people are going to be hurt. But I just hope that everyone in the PRN audience protect themselves so that they could survive whatever this theater of the absurd is going to be when it's all said and done. Have a
Well,
beautiful
thank
day,
you.
Utrecht, and you
Thank
sound so
you.
beautiful and strong. Take care of yourself.
That's it. Don't get all entangled with this. We're not detectives. We're not investigators. We are not of that caliber. So we have to maintain a certain level head. about these kinds of things, because inevitably new things will come along. It always happens that way. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
As we are talking about survival, I think it's important for us to recognize we're not just talking about survival here in the U.S. We're talking about worldwide survival of people of color. So, for example, you now have a man who was recently, well, he's going to have a runoff. But in Brazil, they just elected what would be the counterpart to the sociopath that we have in the White House here in New York. He, too, is of the same ilk and is getting ready to inflict a lot of pain on the Afro-Brazilians in Brazil. And then you have somebody like Boris Johnson in the UK who says, when we go back into Africa this time we're not going to leave. So it's not just survival of people of color here in the U.S. This is a worldwide phenomena.
Absolutely.
But as we talk about, you know, we always say that the things that affect us directly is local. I don't know what else to say to my brothers and sisters and my kith and kin, but last week I had the opportunity to speak to Donna Brazil. You know me, I call in. I go everywhere. I attend town halls. As a matter of fact, I attended the town hall for Kristen Gillibrand, who is the New York State Senator. I may have mentioned this to you up at Riverside Church a few weeks ago, and I asked her where was the black agenda, and she started stuttering. And so when I had the opportunity to call in last week, I shared with Donna Brazile, as the Democrats are trying to get anybody with a little bit of melanin hue to come out to vote on November the 6th. I said to her, you know, there's nothing that the Democrats are doing that is resonating in communities of color. And maybe that's why, you know, this blue wave that you talked about is not getting ready to occur. And of course, and so I mentioned examples of non-traditional Democrats who they did not support. So you look at Gilliam in Florida, he was not there, he didn't receive their support. Ayanna Pressley in Massachusetts, she didn't get their support. Alexandria Ocasio in New York, she didn't get, in other words, the non-traditional people on the party line that who clearly are espousing something different from the party line, those were not the people who got their support. And I reminded her, that 2 years ago when Perez said that he was going to now address and respond to the concerns and complaints that women of color, who are the backbone of the Democratic Party, were not being supported. He says, we're going to fix that. We're going to correct that. And then earlier this year, you had all of those black women across the country running in positions, and the only person they supported out of the 43 women was Stacey Abrams in Georgia. So I don't know how many different ways the Democrats say to black folks, you're not on the agenda. Just come and do your duty. It's like going to the casinos, giving up your dollars, and not expecting to win anything back. I don't know what else to say, and I don't know what else to do. So when I shared this with our sister Donna Brazile, she proceeded to tell me about all the candidates that she is supporting, all the non-traditional candidates across the country that she is supporting, none of whom I heard. But then, of course, if they're non-traditional candidates, I shouldn't hear about them because they're local. But what I was clearly saying to her is, look, don't expect us to come out of the woodworks. You know, we're not falling for the okey-doke anymore. We woke. And the problem you're having now is that we woke.
I like that. So what did she have to say? I mean, you made a point. What was her counterpoint other than it's not true, it's not so?
She said that she was going to continue to support candidates who support the black agenda. And that was her response. And of course, you know, these call-in things are very time limited, so they click you and you don't have an opportunity to respond.
Oh, well. Well, but you got your main point across, and that's good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know how else.
It's so apparent, the Democratic Party, the parties, both of them, they're not doing anything particularly new or innovative. They're not getting all exercised. They have a formula that says we need X number of people voting for us. As long as we get that X number, we're good. We couldn't care less whether they're young or old. The dynamic results that we're looking for may or may not be there. We just want the numbers. We don't care about the fine details. It's a long time since the Democrats actually behaved as if it was important to them to really measure how effective they are with all these different segments of our community and of our vote. But that's not what they do.
You know, it's really interesting. Right now in Brooklyn, they are stealing the homes of homeowners, mostly African-American, homes that have been paid off. But somehow, and I'm still trying to read articles to determine how they were able to repossess these people's homes who are paid off and turn them over to developers. I don't hear anything about it. No, that's not true. Tish James, finally, after a couple of these homeowners had their homes stolen, Tish James finally said that she wants a moratorium on this program. But the point is, not a black politician in Brooklyn, and most of these are Caribbean homeowners, home stolen, and nobody. And the reason I'm focusing on the Democrats is because the Democrats supposedly are the party of us. I don't care about the Republicans. We know who they are. But the Democrats purport to be the party of the people, brown people.
Well, Harlem is under direct assault. We have a $91 million project that will be completed shortly if it gets the green light, and it looks like it will. But Harlem is, broadsided by attacks.
Long gone.
Brooklyn, Bedford-Stuyvesant, and some of the so-called non-traditional areas like Canarsie and others. You know, people are not paying attention to what's going on. The other part would be in Queens and Jamaica and St. Albans. It's amazing what's happening in New York City with regard to housing. But then, you know, you have a black housing and urban development secretary who allegedly is a brain surgeon.
He should have stayed as a brain surgeon.
That's what he should have done.
He should have done that. That's his area of expertise.
That he should have stayed in his lane.
He should have stayed in his lane.
It is a sad, sad commentary.
It is a sad state of affairs.
But that is going to be a major issue. That's going to be a big issue very soon for New York City and the plundering of housing stock that's available in black and brown communities. It's happening. Thanks a lot for calling in.
The last thing I want to say, if I can, there was an op-ed in the Times a few weeks ago that they now want to just graze down public housing.
Oh, yeah. They began that a long time ago. They began that to privatize public housing units. In Harlem, this was happening quite a bit.
No, I don't mean privatize. I mean get rid of it. In other words, just blow them to smithereens and start over.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, I did tell you that the two very important committees that you need to watch in New York City, of the two of them, one is the zoning and land use.
Land use, yes.
That's how New York City was systematically destroyed and given to the developers.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks so much for calling in. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes. Greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I want to thank Patricia for that information, especially those in New York City. And I also want to say one way that they do it is through this... In some states, it's called conservatorships or guardianships, guardianships in New York. And if a person is, by the court, declared disabled and or incompetent, they can seize the property, and there are just spades of it that go unaddressed. A naturopath physician who I believe moved at some point to your state, his mother got her house seized under the guardianship. So, and I'll be looking forward to further research and reports from Patricia. I just want to say I agree to what was a lot that was said earlier, and it's wonderful to have the phone archives, which I listen to. You know how as the season changes, you need more rest, and so I got to listen to the discussion on immigration and want to say a lot of good points were made, but also if we look at the history of Central America and why they're in the situation of the violence and the extreme poverty, you can go back to, say, 54, where, you know, the CIA puts on a covert operation, removes the democratically elected President Arbenz, and his family had very tragic circumstances. He was found in a bathtub, you know, not fully disclosed his murder. I think one of the daughters committed suicide. So there are all sorts of repercussions in the 80s. Reagan and I mean, you know, what went on in terms of covert training their officers at the School of the Americas, now Western Hemisphere Institute for for death squads and civil war. So when the wars are officially over, you know, the people take roles in the gangs and their police and militias, so they have a big mess. But I also want to lastly speak to this situation that I'm following. And I must say, not a fan of CSI or Law and Order from the fictional point of view, but love a mystery and detectives. And now it's turning out. With this, first of all, he's identified as a white male, and the part that I could see on the van, along with CNN putting, he did like a montage on the different windows. The one I could see was Pence and Trump, and you know their theater and stage performances, and at the a whole montage of his love for the Trump administration, and down at the bottom there was one of CNN sucks and everything. So it's very instructive, and of course it lets us know how depraved the Republicans and right wing are. In that, of course, right away, they, in fact, out of, what's the guy, Ron DeSantos running, there were signs saying fake news, fake bombs. So right away, without any evidence, of course, it's, and Trump referred to it as bomb stuff and wanting to get back. So again, we're dealing with sociopaths, but it's only the front end of it. Guns and Butter, which I think is coming up at 3, I hope they're doing the piece with, I think his last name is Dyer, and he's done a book called Esoteric Hollywood, talking about the predictive programming and who really runs the front men. So that's my last thought.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Bill from New Jersey. What have you to say? What's on your mind that you are freeing up today?
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello.
Good. A couple things. I agree wholeheartedly with a couple callers that called yesterday that said, all right, there's something wrong with this story. I mean, it cries out false flag, if for no other reason, the timing. I don't believe in coincidence. I don't think there's any such a thing as coincidence. And coincidence is basically about timing. And when I see something happening that has a timing, a specific timing that benefits someone, I automatically, my radar goes up. The other thing is, with these false flags, it's always the crazy lone gunman. America's been going with that crazy lone gunman thing for a long time, and if you're going to go with that, you always have your fall guy pre-selected before the event. And sometimes they even help the fall guy along his way. There's a history of covert operations where they say, hey, you know, don't you want to bomb these guys, you know, that you don't like? We can help you get some of the materials and help it along its way. So crazy lone gunman, no. I'm sure that when Kennedy was assassinated, basically 99% of the country believed that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, just as they will believe this guy did it. But unless you're willing to believe that magic bullet stuff, it just didn't happen like that. And what Jay alluded to as far as everything is filmed, and that is 100% true. There's no way that it would take them this long to find someone that mailed the package. When you send a letter, front and back of that letter is photographed. Every single one. A lot of people aren't aware of that. Every single one. And a package is much more watched, tracked. They have tracking numbers where you can tell where the package is at any time of the day, whether it's on this truck, whether it's in this state. There's cameras in UPS offices, FedEx offices, post offices. There's just no way that it would take that long to come up with this guy. And it originates from, you know, our friend Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Somehow she's involved because one of the return addresses was to her office, and things go on in Debbie Wasserman Schultz district that are very unkosher. So as soon as I hear her name, I cry foul. And then the last thing is, whatever the media tells us, whatever they tell us, we know that it is not so. There may be some truth to it, but we can rest assured that it is not 100% true what they tell us. That's why we need alternative media. That's why we need PRN, because we know that the news will not tell us 100% the gospel truth. That's not how it's done. It hasn't been done like that in a long time. So we can assume that whatever comes out, it won't be exactly what happened. We should be aware of that, to be skeptical, because we will not be told 100% the truth. If we're told any truth at all, it certainly won't be 100% of the truth. So
you have very high expectations of media, which boggles my mind. that's not how they work. That's not how the media works. We will eventually, for example, be talking about the what they're calling now the disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi. But what they've told us so far makes no sense whatsoever, and yet, you know, people are trying to profess some kind of, you know, great in a deep understanding of it. We don't know anything.
Right. The only way to know is to actually, and I'm sure you're a journalist, you know, you ran a newspaper. The only way to know is to go out there and get the story yourself. You can't take it secondhand from a news service or what another reported. The only way to know 100% is to go out there and get that story yourself firsthand.
But
that's the only way you can know
information,
for sure.
Just as a plain consumer of information, your best bet is to just wait and
sure.
Follow the developments that they permit us to know.
And when you start
thinking about it, you see all the gaps. There's so many gaps here.
Right. And that was the next thing I was going to say. You have to also read between the lines. Read between the lines. And does this make sense? Does this resonate as truth with me? You know, the old follow the money. Who benefits from this story being spun this way? Because all stories have a spin on them based on who's telling it. So does the spin benefit this person? Does the spin benefit that person? You know, how is it being spun? How is it being presented to us? Is it propaganda? Exactly. or is it truth?
Well, you know, this is why we have on Lead Stories, a program that I haven't seen it on any other program, called Media Literacy. You just study. You just look at what is being presented, and it begins to unfold that very often what is being presented as the news is not really the news. You just have to wait, and they will give you the ammunition you need in following these kinds of stories. We don't know yet.
We don't.
What is going on here? We know that there are certain developments. Okay. We take that into consideration. But we have no idea what the story is here yet.
And yes, and Eutrice, can I give you one more thing to think about today? Completely
sure.
On another topic. I think that you really need to do a series of shows on your music. Your music, you know, it's we look forward to it at the beginning of the show, and your explanations of the artists is unbelievable. I imagine a house full of vinyl and a record player, but I think that music, and maybe you agree with me, music is, as far as a tool for education, for inspiration, motivation, a tool for unity, bringing people together. I don't think there's a tool that is as important and as versatile as music. I think we need more than just the opening of the show of your musicology. We need a series or a week of shows dealing with the message in the music and what's being said and what we can learn from it.
I just want to put that on the table. Thank you so much.
I love music.
I love music of all kinds, but I think we minimize the role the arts historically have played in our political struggles, because there are all kinds of things. It may be plays, it may be spoken word, it may be novels and so forth. And we tend to ignore their contribution also to the communal struggle that we have waged. Thank you so much for the idea, though. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes. New Eutrice.
Hi.
I'm going to try to change tack for a time. What I'm thinking about is that many of us continue to do what I call react. The corporate media that controls the information that most people have serve up certain things to you, like this placing the bombs and various other things. And many of us observe that. We drink that in, and we maybe do analysis of it, and we make commentary. You know, for example, many of us do this on PRN with you, and that's fine. But the point I'm getting to is something like what our brother Harvey does when he brings to our attention things that are really progressive and important and would benefit most of the people. Now, I think that, for example, when we talk about these two divisions of the one party that's in the same league, and we talk about all the things that this one says and that one says, and Trump does some bombastic thing. That's interesting. But I'm not hearing enough about what people want. I would like to hear the people in this seminar call in and talk about what people really, what the masses of people want, not the ruling class that decides what their gender is, what they want in terms of housing, what they want in terms of what the people want in terms of schools, what they want in terms of economic development. You know, it might be co-ops, it might be some type of capitalism, so, but what the people want in that area, what the people want in terms of so-called quote-unquote defense. Do they want this huge budget of nearly $1 trillion in defense and the money that goes towards the secret police, and that is the FBI and the CIA and others? What people want in all these areas, what people want rather than just reacting to things that events that happen and never dealing with that. When people have these programs where they're having so-called, quote-unquote, debates, all they do is insult each other and waste time. I wanna hear where people stand on certain things. For example, we've talked about housing. How about the possibility of not destroying public housing, but having public housing available to all people as a human right, and having no more, let's say, than 10% of a person's income paying for that housing? What about a possibility of people wanting a national pension system, improving upon Social Security? Social Security gives a pittance to people. Everyone should be covered by a social pension system that is transferable to any job that you have. And that would do to keep all the people out of poverty. We need to change the Social Security system, for example, get rid of the cutoff point at somewhere around $110,000 and collect Social Security for all income. We need to change. What do people want in terms of a tax system? Here the people have let Trump put in a tax system that benefits the few at the expense of the many. Do people want that? I mean, if you think about it, nobody should want that if they want to do benefit for the people. What do we want in terms of creating systems, social systems, that give people benefits for children and families, and things like daycare for all at a low price, things for free lunch for all children, things like education and getting rid of the process of student loans. We need to be talking about those things and demanding those things, so politicians can't get up there and waste our time listening to a lot of gobbledygook and never talk about those issues. I hear practically no discussion about those things. A simple thing like health care. Why can't we talk about having a national health service to prevent these people in the health care business from running a scam, doing unnecessary surgeries, giving people pharmaceutical drugs that are not needed, doing things like giving people radiation that kills their immune system? All these areas of social and economic and things that affect us from all over the world should be discussed And that's what we should be doing, rather than listen to a lot of stuff about Trump and what he said and the murder of the journalists. And remember that Obama used to have Murder Tuesdays every week, where he decided who he was going to murder. And that's not unusual. All these major imperial countries do the same thing. That's nothing new whatsoever. So that's
But you know, I think you're ignoring a very important point. There's absolutely nothing that I could argue with in terms of what you think the thrust and focus ought to be. But we also have to deal with a reality. Our own system has taught us that. And all those things that you're describing fall under the label of socialism. This is, I mean, you just say socialism, or you just even hint at it, it is actually the epitome of what a good, well-organized, human and humane society ought to be doing. That's not what this government is dedicated to. That's not what the mindset is in America. Everything must generate a profit. It's a profit motive. It's about money. It's about people succeeding. I talked a bit about it in a commentary. I talked about zero-sum thinking. That mindset dictates that it is not enough that I'm rich. I am rich. And the follow-through to that thought is, and you are not. I am rich and you are poor. I cannot feel good about being rich unless I can see evidence that you are poor. That's the psychological reinforcement that makes me feel good about being rich. It comes with the exact opposite also being desired and being maintained in order that the people who enjoy privileges, the people who have wealth, the people who are in charge of creating our policy, this inevitably is what it is they concoct these policies around. How do you create? It's not enough to create a class that has, as opposed to a class that doesn't. It is important also to create the psychological underpinnings for all of that. You can't, after all, feel good about your wealth if everybody is wealthy. It does nothing. That's not a good thing. You'll feel good about your wealth as opposed to those people who are not wealthy. It sounds bizarre, but this is it. This is really what happens in the United States that is so different from other modern societies that have caught on. Sweden is one of them. Sweden is not obsessed about people, one group of people, proving their superiority and their better circumstances in life as opposed to other people. They've learned the lesson, hard lesson, that would only create dissension, division, and even crime in their society. In their thinking now, it wasn't that way before, but in their thinking now, the idea is to progress to another way of thinking. And that is, what can we do to create more equity within our society as a whole, so that a person who doesn't have all the trinkets and all the goodies does not come from a place all the time of resenting the wealth of others. And those who are wealthy don't have to be concerned about constantly lauding their wealth and planning and plotting of ways to keep it, even if it destroys their neighbors and their communities. It's a very strange kind of thinking in the United States, this zero-sum way of looking at the world. And that is no mean feat to conquer. That is a huge part, the psychological reinforcement for the wrong decisions that are being made, for the horrible ways in which we live, the inhumane things that we do under the guise of the law and the government. That's a huge part of it.
Yes, but as I see it, you're right. It's not an easy thing to do, and it's even more difficult because of the state of the system of white supremacy racism we have that reinforces the status quo of the system. But we got to make some dents in this. We have to start somewhere. We have to bring these things to people's attention. And it's got to start somewhere. It might be just one person who starts this type of thing.
We agree. I don't disagree at all. It's very important. But, this is part of what people say when they start talking about things take time. But it has to start somewhere. And you're absolutely right about that. You got to do it. Thank you so much, David, for calling in. Julie, you're on the air.
Patrice?
Julie? Yes.
Hello, PRN community today.
Thank you.
You requested us to be concise in getting our points across, and I'm going to try to do that, but this is an experience that I had this week as opposed to a specific point. But I listened to the program on Tuesday where Kim Ives spoke about Haiti.
Yes.
And it just so happened I had a friend here from Seattle who had noticed an exhibit at a museum in Brooklyn, and it's in Red Hook, Brooklyn. And I said that I'd only been there one other time, but that I'd be happy to find out where it was and take her out there. But I also remembered an article that I had archived, and I was able to get my hands on it this week. I had put it in a separate directory, and it's dated April 27, 2016, at which time I was, even at that time, I've been working on the housing crisis and gentrification and issues such as that. And so this article caught my eye, and I was somewhat sad for this person. The article is entitled, it was in the Village Voice, "After leaving her beloved Red Hook, a New Yorker learns to live and belong in the Motor City." So I realized that I was introduced by Patricia, who called in earlier, to lead stories approximately a month after that. That would have been May 2016. So since then, I have been listening and remember many of the programs and their relevance and so forth. So this article about Red Hook stuck with me, and when I heard the presentation by Kim Ives on Tuesday about Haiti, and found out this museum was there, I wanted to take my friend out there. But it also caused me to read her article and reflect on housing and gentrification, because this was a two-couple family with income in six figures, she says. But and at one time, Red Hook had been the crack capital, and the infrastructure went lacking, as many areas do. And she spoke about the way she divided her experience there was that there's like the back and the front of Red Hook, and the front was the island side, and the back side was fried chicken and pizza parlors, but the two sides of that community rarely worked together. Now, I've only been to Red Hook twice, but just from reading the article, I could relate to some things had changed and some had not. But after the bus ride out there, the first thing that came to mind was that I needed to find out how to get one of these ferries back, because it was a very long bus ride. But after listening to lead stories and hearing about Detroit over the years now, I could not help, when I read the article this time 2 years later, to feel for the people that were in Detroit all along, who can't afford to go there and buy what she called a crazy Detroit house, because they paid $30,000 for their house, where they couldn't have paid that in New York for a home, but it cost nearly a half million to renovate the house. So I got in touch with what it might feel like for the people that live in Detroit that now have their lives upended. Some people have left, some have not left, but, you know, just the circumstances. I could realize in the 2 years how much I could empathize with the person that had to leave Red Hook and the people that are in Detroit, because of, you know, now they're affordable, and now they could leave New York and go there and be a part of the 1%. But the people in Detroit are, you know, 40% poverty level, I believe it is. But at any rate, I went to Red Hook, and this museum there, it's called the Pioneer Works, and it has an exhibit of urban artists in Port-au-Prince. So I just wanted to share that with the audience, that for the people that live in New York, they might have an opportunity to go there and support Haitian artists and to view the exhibit. And also, some things are changed. She's talked about the front and the back of Red Hook, but where this museum is located was not even a 5-minute walk to the ferry. So there are changes in that neighborhood now. And of course, there are people listening to this that know far more about Red Hook than I do. I just wanted to share the experience that there is this exhibit there at Pioneer Works, and, you know, to let people know and perhaps be supportive.
That's my cue. We have to wrap up. Thank you so much for sharing, Julie, and welcome to being on air on PRN. This brings us to the end of our program today, and I thank you all, as usual, for the high caliber of your contributions. Let's keep it that way. Enjoy yourselves over the weekend, finding yourself in company with people who elevate you. And we'll see each other on Monday. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.